The Coachman and the Worm. A former servant of ours, a pathetic fellow, is now the driver of a hackney cab. You'll probably remember how he married the daughter of that porter who was awarded a prestigious prize at the same time that his wife was being sentenced to penal servitude for theft, whereas he, the porter, was actually the thief. In any case, this unfortunate man, Tolle, our former servant, has, or thinks he has, a tapeworm inside him. He talks about it as though it were a living person who communicates with him and tells him what it wants. And when Tolle is talking to you, the word he always refers to this creature inside him. Sometimes Tolle has a sudden urge and attributes it to the tapeworm. He wants it, he says. And right away, Tolle obeys. Lately, he wanted to eat some fresh white rolls. Another time, he had to have some white wine, though the next day, he was outraged because he wasn't given red. The poor man has by now lowered himself in his own eyes to the same level as the tapeworm. They are equals waging a fierce battle for dominance. He said to my sister-in-law lately, "That creature has it in for me. It's a battle of wills, you see. He's forcing me to do what he likes, but I'll have my revenge. Only one of us will be left alive." Well, the man is the one who will be left alive, or rather not for long, because in order to kill the worm and be rid of it, he recently swallowed a bottle of vitriol and is at this very moment dying. What a strange thing it is, the human brain. Yesterday, in the deep snow, I went to an exhibition of savages that had come here from Le Havre. They were Kaffirs. The poor Negroes, and their manager too, looked as if they were dying of hunger. You paid a few pennies to get into the exhibition. It was in a miserable, smoke-filled room up several flights of stairs. It was not well attended. Seven or eight fellows in work clothes sat here and there in the rows of chairs. We waited for some time. Then a sort of wild beast appeared, wearing a tiger skin on his back and uttering harsh cries. A few more followed him into the room. There were four altogether. He got up on a platform and crouched around a stew pot. Hideous and splendid at the same time, they were covered with amulets and tattoos. As thin as skeletons, their skin the color of my well-seasoned old pipe. Their faces were flat, their teeth white, their eyes large, their expressions desperately sad, astonished, and brutalized. The twilight outside the windows and the snow whitening the rooftops across the street cast a gray pall over them. I felt as though I were seeing the first men on earth. Their manager claimed they knew a little English, so after the show was over, I asked them a few questions, but they couldn't answer. I was glad to leave that dismal place and go back out into the snow, though I had lost my boots somewhere. Later, I heard that after the exhibition, their manager abandoned them. They'd been in Rouen for nearly 2 months by then, first on the Boulevard Beauvoisin, then in the Grande Rue, where I saw them. At the end, they were living in a little hotel in the Rue de la Vicomté. Their only recourse was to take their case to the English consul. I don't know how they made themselves understood, but the consul paid their debts, 400 francs to the hotel, and then put them on a train for Paris. They had an engagement there. It was to be their Paris debut.